Mic check, 1, 2.
Mic check, all right. All right, go ahead.
Oh, there's no intro?
Yeah.
Oh. Welcome to Talk It To Me.
We're not going to have... Yeah, I'm ready for that. We're not going to have any musical intro this time because this whole podcast is going to be music. We're going to be discussing one of our favorite bands, I think, Nirvana. And we're gonna just, it's going to be
you think?
Our second part, the second part, a second in our deep dive series. First one we did was David Bowie. Go back and check that one out. This one's going to be all about Nirvana. A little less in depth into the career, but more just about the music. Because with Bowie, I'd like, you know, I went a little bit into like his background stuff. Here, we're not really going to go into that. So, all right, we'll start off the top.
And this time, I kind of know a little bit more.
You're like, I actually know what we're talking about this time. All right, so Kurt Cobain, you know, the lead singer, guitarist of Nirvana, and Chris Novoselic, bassist, were friends as teenagers in Aberdeen, Washington.
Aberdeen?
And
shout out to Aberdeen. Any listeners, email us.
And in 1987... they formed a band called Nirvana, and the rest is history. But
a little known fact that in their early years they were called the Silver Nirvana. I'm just kidding, like the Silver Beatles, but no one get
that. You had me. I was like, oh really? I was like, I don't remember reading that. You son of, you're like, there were the Rock Men instead of the Quarrymen. Oh, that was stupid. All right. So in June 15, 1989, they came out with their debut album, Bleach.
That's true.
And there's only really, for me at least, there's two songs off Bleach that I like. You probably have more, but for me personally, there's only two songs that I like.
I like the whole album, but go ahead. Let's get to this. People want to listen to music. That's why they came, not to hear us speak.
Yeah, okay. So this is you know, the single off of Bleach called About a Girl, and the song is About a Girl.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Dave Grohl isn't here yet.
No.
This is Chad Channing, I
believe. Yeah, yeah. This is Chad Channing on drums. Dave Grohl, not yet. So this song apparently is very Beatles-y.
Yeah.
And I can kind of hear it.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's the equivalent to the Beatles' Love Me Do.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What kind of starts.
It's the grunge Love Me Do.
Yeah, it's very, it's very like there's not a whole lot to it. It's kind of straightforward. You have the guitar, you have the bass, you have the drums.
Apparently, Kurt had spent a whole afternoon listening to Meet the Beatles on repeat, and then wrote this song.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where, I mean, I can hear it, but sometimes I'm like, they're tripping. I don't hear the Beatles in here. But then other times I'm like, no I hear it.
I definitely do. You know, he was a big John Lennon fan.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So I like that song. It's a nice, simple rock song. Yeah,
and it's cool because if you look at it that way, it's kind of like a, like you see the parallel, you know, a little bit of like Nirvana and the Beatles and why they're both so special.
Yeah. Okay. So I was gonna say something. It's gone.
It's gone, dude.
All right. So the next song off of and the last song off of Bleach is a Love Buzz. Oh, I know. I was gonna say. Production-wise, this is very rough compared to what we're going to get in their next album. Right now, they're, like, I think still very, like, in that grunge mode. I mean, they're you know, they're the most famous grunge band ever, but they kind of step away a little from that, I think, in the next album, but here's the next song off Bleach, Love Buzz. Here it is. What a fucking bass line, dude. And where you said parallels, Paul McCartney and Chris Novoselic are fucking killer bass players.
Yeah, in different ways.
Yeah.
Like, Paul, I mean, Paul's always going to be in a different category when it comes to bass players.
Yeah.
Because he's also a really great guitar player.
Oh, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Chris, though, like, and again, a lot of the bass parts in Nirvana music is very simple. It's not complex. Yeah. Not like Paul parts in certain songs.
Yeah, where you're like, what the fuck is he doing there?
But what's nice is that they all complement one another in the band, like the sounds, you know, like no one's trying to overdo anything or make it too, like, crazy.
Yeah. I just, I really enjoy the bass in Nirvana and this song in particular. I think that's the, for me, that's what makes the song, like, really, like, special on this album is the bass line. I'm like, oh fuck, this is really good. And
but really quick though, Bleach though, I know I get why people might not like Bleach so much because it is very raw, but I happen to like raw music. I prefer like live stuff over
really.
I do.
I can't agree with you on that one.
I love going to shows and listening to bands live because I feel like that's true. It's pure. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, though. Like, I love the next album, Nevermind, you know, for different reasons. But that's why I like Bleach. It's because it's what you hear is what it's really meant to be heard.
Yeah. Like, if you went to see them live, it probably wouldn't have been much different than what you're hearing.
And it wasn't.
Whereas with Nevermind, it's like you can't recreate that in a concert. Okay. The next song is actually not off an album, but it was a single. It's called Sliver. Here it is. Mom and Dad went to a show. They dropped me off at Grandpa Joe's. I kicked and screamed, so please no. Grandma, take me home. Grandma, take me home.
Grandma take me home. Grandma take me home. Yeah, that's a good one too.
It's like it's very punk for me. It's like very like it's like that subject matter like works very well in punk. Like, oh, it's just about a kid who doesn't want to be at his fucking grandparents' house.
Yeah. And I don't know how it was for you, but for me growing up, that's the way it was. Even though I love my great grandma, but I always just wanted to be home.
Yeah, you know, I think. Me and Kat talked about this. Kat says this song hits for her so many times, like so much, because she used to be at her grandparents' house and she'd be like, oh my god, like I just want to go home.
Yeah.
She loves her grandparents, but it's like after a while, you're just like, all right, like what the fuck am I doing here? But I never had this experience because my grandma lives in Mexico and whenever we're there, it was on vacation and my parents were there too. So I don't know. I missed out on this experience, I guess, but I like that song. It's very, just a simple, but again, that bass.
Yeah.
Really good. And this is still no Dave Grohl. So our next song in 1991, it came out with an album. You might have heard of it, called Nevermind. One of the all-time albums. There's only a couple albums, I think, that have a humongous cultural impact. Like, you know, Sgt. Pepper's is one. probably Led Zeppelin 4. Not so much, but, you know, it's like a couple albums a decade where you're like, holy shit, what is this? And I feel like Nevermind is definitely that album for the 90s. Because everything after it is like a, it's almost like a cause and effect.
Yeah.
Like everything after it is like a ripple effect of Nevermind. And even the album cover is like one of the most iconic album covers ever. Yeah, the baby floating in the pool with the dollar bill in front of it.
Yeah.
So the first song is also the first single off the album. It's called Smells Like Teen Spirit. Everyone's heard this one.
Really quick. So again, this to me, when anyone talks about the 90s, this song came out, what, like in 91, 92?
91.
91. Okay, like, the 90s didn't start in 1990. The 90s started in 1991 when this single came out.
Yeah.
Like, that's when the 90s started. When this song came out?
No, as I was not even a year old.
You weren't? What the heck?
How? I was born October 28, 1990. Jesus, dude.
Christ.
I wasn't fucking.
Then you have
old
no
enough.
Idea. Oh my
no,
God.
I have no idea.
I was like, I guess like what, 91? So it was 9. I don't know what month this came out, but I was 9 years old. But I definitely remember, dude. I remember hearing it. I don't know where I heard it first, but I remember a friend of mine loaning me his cassette player.
September 10th, 1998.
Okay, then I was 10. I remember my friend lending me the cassette he got, you know, and I ran home, put it in my cassette player, and listened to it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, being transfixed to this amazing sound that I hadn't quite heard before. There's been stuff kind of like that mirrored it or sounded like it leading up to this point, but not like that. You know,
yeah.
Like that opening, that intro is great with the guitar, but then as soon as the growl comes in with the drums and then the heavy distortion, that's like...
That's the ticket,
yeah.
As they say. So for this song... The drums were already written by Chad Channing. And this was like one of the first songs they recorded. So Dave Grohl just went along with what he did. Except Dave Grohl's, I think for me, his drumming is very distinctive. It's like very, he hits fucking hard, dude. He's like, boom, boom, just banging the fuck out of the drums. So I think like, cause like the drums on Love Buzz and About a Girl on Bleach, they're kind of like, they're kind of like weak almost. They're there, but they're not really like over. They're not like Dave Grohl when you just like you hear it just bah, 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 you know, like just beats the fuck out of the drums. And I think that's one of like that is what I think elevates Nirvana. I think that's when they took the step up, you know, when they got Dave Grohl that propelled them forward.
Again, like the Beatles, it was up to the drumming. No, if you think about
it. Yeah, Pete Best. They're like, whatever. And then they got Ringo.
Yeah, again, there's another parallel, you know?
And isn't... I think Ringo's Dave Grohl's favorite drummer.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess he is.
And, dude, that the riff, one of the all-time riffs, instantly recognizable. You're... And you're like, oh,
yeah.
It's Nirvana. And, music video is one of the most iconic music videos. This is just one of those songs that just hits on every level. Like, it captures the time that it came out. The spirit of the time. And I also want to say, fuck Enter Sandman. I guess I should explain that. We went to a Dodger game yesterday, and the Friday Night Fireworks, where the theme was 90s, and they opened with Enter Sandman, which is not what I fucking think when I think of the 90s. I think of Smells Like Teen Spirit. I mean, the other stuff they play was all right, but really, Enter Sandman is what you're going to play over Smells Like Teen Spirit? Come on. Drop the ball. All right.
I enjoyed it.
Shut up. All right. next song is going to be In Bloom. This is the first song that Dave Grohl actually like came up with the drum part on his own. Okay. And what a fucking intro, dude. The pop, 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 pop. It's really great. The bass line's great. It's just, I just love this song. It's just a great, like, for me, a great showing of their rhythm section.
Yeah. What?
Oh, you're not hearing the headphones. Dude, it sounded like a fucking blue whale just, like, swam by us. They're no. Like a...
I stopped. I couldn't have the headphones on anymore.
Why?
It's just too loud.
Really?
Yeah. I think you have really bad hearing.
Oh, wait. Try these.
Let's see how this sounds. Hello? Try it. Well, speak to me.
Okay. Check one, two.
I don't know. I guess so. I'll try for a little bit and see how it sounds.
Oh, these are too tangled. That doesn't matter.
You're too tangled, dude. Here, no. It was just that.
Oh. Check one, two. Oh, yeah, this is our lap.
I know.
Okay. Where should we start? Did you say everything you needed to say about In Bloom?
Yeah, it's just a great song. I don't have, like, detailed notes on the songs, so that's okay. Why.
I just have little things.
I have to, like, I can only speak to what, you know, like, what my heart says. But right now, you know, it's just a good song.
All right. On to the next song, Come As You Are. Again, one of the most iconic Nirvana songs.
This is the only song I don't like, though. But play it, though. We'll talk about it later.
So explain why you don't like that song.
Okay, well, first let me just say that that song does hold a lot of importance in terms of my growing.
Mm-hmm.
So I played guitar. I played guitar for many, many years. However, the Beatles weren't the ones that inspired me to play music and guitars. I would have to say that it wasn't until Nirvana that I was like, I want to play guitar.
Yeah.
And this song, I was kind of the song that really inspired me to write a lot of my music.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the guitar parts that ding 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 ding. Yeah. In fact, if you you can't listen to any of my early stuff because I don't have it anymore. But any of my early music that I had recorded, a lot of them had that same type of intro.
Yeah.
So that was something that really inspired me to start music, right? However, as growing up, and you, this is going to be a really dumb reason to not like a song, right? When you fall in love and there's a woman you like, or a girl, however old you are at the time, right? And then you have common interests, and one is Nirvana, and their favorite song is Come As You Are. And you put that song as their, like, ringtone, you know, and every time they call or text you, that's the song you get. And it's not that, and that isn't the reason why. It's just because that now, whenever I hear that song, I think of that person. And it kind of bugs me.
Okay.
And the good thing is that that person doesn't hear this podcast.
Okay. That you know of.
No, she doesn't, yeah.
I love the watery. It sounds like very watery, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like underwater.
Yeah.
I think of the Puget Sound in Seattle. This song reminds me a lot of Seattle because I was listening to this song on the way to Seattle the first time I went. This and another song we'll talk about later are like the songs that when I hear, I'm like, I think of Seattle for better or for worse. You know, when the Aberdeen. When you go into Aberdeen, there's the sign that says "Welcome to Aberdeen, come as you are."
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like tribute for this song. Even though I'm pretty sure like Kurt Cobain hated Aberdeen, and they wanted to raise a statue of him in Aberdeen.
Right.
And Chris Novoselic was like, "If you do that, I'll personally go down there and take it out." Like, he's like, "Me and Kurt fucking hated that place so much." And when we, and that's why when we got fucking our first opportunity, we got the fuck out of there and never looked back.
Well, poor Aberdeen, they're like, oh.
I know, man. They're like, damn it. Hey, they got WWE wrestler Daniel Bryan from there, so. And he doesn't seem to hate it. All right, so next song on the album. By the way, we're going to play, we're playing every song off Nevermind. Because every song on this album is a fucking banger. Breed is the next song. Here it goes.
In that bass,
yeah,
and the distortion in the bass,
so good. That song is so good. It's, but I don't really have anything deep to say about it other than it's just a great song. It's just, yeah, like if you're there live and they, you know, that song starts up, you're like, fucking,
oh yeah, that song's banging. Live, it's, yeah, like, it's over,
it's banging. So dude, this whole album is like a fucking murderer's row for me. It's just like
the 1934 Yankees.
Yeah, it's just like home run after fucking home run. Like, you don't stand a fucking chance hearing this fucking album. So the next song is Lithium. We'll hear a little Lithium.
Yeah.
I'm so happy 'cause today I found my friends in my head. I'm so ugly, that's okay, 'cause so are you. Book of Mirrors, Sunday morning is every day for all I care. And I'm not scared, light my candles in our days, 'cause I found God.
Yeah. the intro again to that one. So you know how we say it, how Bleach is very raw and this is very, very produced. But this one had to be, because to get the sound like that, it's such a beautiful, clean guitar intro. Oh my god, it's great.
I think this song exemplifies the Nirvana sound, where alternate between the na 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 and it's just like that's so Nirvana. That was like their sound, and this song's like the perfect example. I fucking love this song. It's a great song. Okay, next song, Polly, and I have a couple things to say about this song. Let's hear a little bit of it first.
A cracker, think I should get off her first. Think she wants some water to put out the blowtorch. Isn't me, have a seat. Let me clip dirty wings. Let me take a ride. Cut yourself, want some help. Please myself, got some rope, haven't told. Promise you, haven't true. Let me take a ride, cut yourself. Want some help, please myself.
Again, even though it's like really, really produced, at the same time, it sounds very raw.
Yeah.
Because you can hear, like, the fumbling in his fingers and the pick strumming, you know, like, you can hear all that. And
it's like kind of a nice little, you know. Yeah. But it's like, if you listen to the lyrics, this song's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's like, well, the lyrics are, Polly wants a cracker. I think I should get off her first. I think she wants some water to put out the blowtorch. And this song was inspired by a 14-year-old girl that got kidnapped in Tacoma, Washington, which I've been to. Fuck you, Tacoma. And she was abducted and they raped her and stuff. And he read this
in the newspaper
and wrote a fucking song about it. And it's a good song, but it's like, what the fuck, dude?
Again, another parallel is in Sergeant Pepper, Paul reads about a girl who runs away from
home. She's leaving home.
Yeah, she's leaving home and writes a song about it. So, you know, again, there's parallels here.
I also think, I'm not saying the song's filler, because I really like the song, but I think it's also kind of a palate cleanser. Because we just heard some fucking, you know, Breed and Lithium. And then here's Pollard to kind of like, all right. Because the next song is like, it kicks it up again.
Yeah.
And this next song, actually, I'll talk about it after, but here it is. It's called Territorial Pissings. Damn, I fucking love that song, dude. I think that might be my favorite off of Nevermind.
So, you know how you say how, like, it's not a filler, but, like, you go from, on, like, a really light, soft note.
Yeah.
High. It's because This is right before, or this is right as CDs are coming on.
Uh-huh.
But they're still doing track listings as if they're putting out vinyl.
Oh, okay.
So this is the first song on this.
Oh, side B?
Side B.
Oh, see, so, I never thought about that.
Yeah, so as you're going through side A, it kind of winds down.
Yeah.
And then you like take it off, you flip it over, put the needle, and then all of a sudden...
And your record player catches fire.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I fucking love that song. Can you imagine having seen them live and then your Chris Novoselic going, come on, people, now. Yeah. So I'll be like, oh, fuck.
They do it live on like shows in Europe. Not here in the U.S. because they're like, no, don't play that song, you know. But, but in Europe, they were doing it live. In fact, I don't know. I don't even remember they were supposed to. But I think there's like one on YouTube video where they're supposed to play a different song and they end up playing it.
Yeah. Dude. It's an all-timer for me. I love that fucking song. I don't mosh, but I feel like if I had been there and they had started playing the song, like, I'm fucking throwing elbows, dude.
There's only certain bands. There's a couple. Well, there's only two bands, I think, that I would really, like, I would have, like, I would feel it in myself to mosh.
Yeah.
One would have been Nirvana. The other one is Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, for me too. Like, if I'm seeing Rage and all of a sudden, you know, dun-dun, 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 I'm like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, but if I'm, like, watching, like, what's a band now? Like, 21 Pilots? Is that whatever?
Yeah, no,
people are, like, watching, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? You know, like,
I mean, that's how I felt at Radiohead, Hollywood Bowl. People were going crazy. I'm like, really?
Well, there's certain songs and certain segments that I can see people doing that. But yeah, a lot of the songs don't call for that.
No, it was all like, songs off like Hail to the Thief. I'm like, really? Really?
All right,
whatever. Anyways, next song is called Drain You. I have nothing to say about it right now, so let's play it first.
One baby to another says I'm lucky.
A fucking great tune. The melody is really good, and I think this song is proof that a good melody can carry shitty lyrics. I read the lyrics of the song like 5 times and I'm like, I don't understand what this is about.
No, you don't have to, dude. Just kind of sit there and listen and enjoy.
Well, I think Kurt Cobain was like, he never really cared that much for the lyrics.
Yeah,
he always like melody first and then everything else. The lyrics were like the last thing he cared about. Yeah. And I think this song exemplifies it. But the melody is so fucking good. And again, that's his Beatles influence, I think.
Yeah.
That it just... It elevates the song. This is a great fucking song. You're just on the radio? Fuck yeah. Even though the lyrics make no goddamn sense. It's still like... It's still a great song.
And as we're going through these songs on this album, and really any song on any album from Nirvana, notice... That Kurt's voice, he was a man of many voices.
Oh yeah,
like his voice was always sung a different way, or with a slightly different accent. Sometimes, you know, like it was, but like he never had the same boring voice.
Yeah,
it was always different, but beautiful at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know,
even when he's screaming.
Yeah, like growing up, like I even to this day, I always felt like if I could sing like anybody, if I could have anyone's voice, it would be Kurt Cobain. It wouldn't be Lennon or Paul or anyone else. It would be Kurt Cobain. I think that was a perfect amount of like beauty, angst,
raw power.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I might agree with you on that one. Although I still, you know, maybe Bowie for me, just to make panties drop, dude. Like Cobain will make you cry, but Bowie makes you wet. All right, that was stupid. I'm sorry to anyone that heard that. Okay, so next song is Lounge Act. Let's hear it. That bass line, though.
Everything.
Yeah, I know, but, like, there's some that you're like, fuck. That bass line is fucking amazing.
And when you watch him play live, he plays it so smooth and, like, yeah. It's, like, there's no, like, it's not hard at all for him. Doom, 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 doom,
doom, doom, doom, doom, doom. I love the lyrics in that song. You know, we're just talking about he didn't really give a shit about lyrics, but that song has pretty good lyrics. Like, truth covered in security. I love that line. And I can't let... Is it truth covered in security? I can't let you smother me. It's like, fuck, dude. I feel it, dude. I feel it. Bitches always be smothering you, dude.
Cat.
Can't fucking breathe. All right. Next song is called Stay Away. Originally titled Pay to Play. I think the song's about, you know, the pay-to-play venues when bands want to play there. Say, all right, but you got to sell tickets.
Yeah.
I think the song's a criticism of that practice. It started out that way. And again, the lyrics are fucking... I don't understand what the fucking song's about. But let's hear it. Again, one of those songs that you hear live, I think, would have been like, holy shit, fuck yeah, they're playing this song. At the end, he yells, God is gay, right, to end the song.
Yeah.
I feel like Kurt was, I think he just liked to piss people off, and I think he knew that's not like, oh, dude, this will piss some people off. Because he always said how much he hated homophobes, and how he wished he was gay just so he could piss off homophobes. And I think that he just threw that in there. It's like, someone's going to get mad at this, and it's going to be great.
And this is before, like, political correctness, and he's like, I don't care. Yeah. People get mad.
It's like, God is gay. Suck on that. Anyways, just another great tune. Great song. Next song is On a Plane, and let's hear that. I love the lyrics in the song because it's like he's very self-referential. There's a lyric that goes, "It's like, as a defense, I'm neutered and spayed. What the hell am I trying to say?" I mean, like, that's he's like talking about his own songwriting.
Yeah,
because you know, he says, somewhere I've heard this before, in my dream, my memory is stored. I think it's just describing the songwriting process. Sometimes you like, you write a song, you're like, wait, did I like steal this from something? Like, am I?
Yeah.
And I feel like,
especially nowadays.
It's pretty meta. I love this song. It's a great song. I always thought he was talking about like an airplane.
Yeah.
It wasn't until like I actually looked at the album. I'm like, oh, he means the other kind of plane. I'm like, is he like in like Kansas or something? Like, where is he in this song? But yeah, so the next song is actually the last song on the Nevermind album, called Something in the Way. And I have a potentially hot take about this song.
By the way, again, this is the end of the not only the side but the album, so we're ending on like a slower note. Like,
yeah. This is, yeah. And we'll hear it. Something in the way. The song is about a time in his life when he lived briefly under a bridge in Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
By the river was the Wishka. Famously, that's what one of the live albums is called, From the Muddy Banks of the Wishka. And so I think this is like the Pacific Northwest version of Under the Bridge by the Chili Peppers, but not as good and way more depressing. Okay. I feel like this song is what keeps Nevermind from being a perfect album.
Why?
Because it's not good. Not very good to me.
Really? But like, it's just, but like, why though?
It's just kind of boring. Just like, Something in the Way. I'm just like, oh man, this feels like a downer. Like it, but not even a downer that I'm like, oh man, fuck. Like, you know, there's some songs that are downers that are good. You know, there's other Nirvana songs like, you know, Dumb. It's kind of a downer. But for some reason, this one just doesn't grab me in any way. It's all right, but like, I never put it on a playlist. And when I listen to Nevermind in full, this song's always like, ah, fuck. Like, why did this song have to be on this album?
Yeah.
I feel like this is the Sun King of Sun King, Beatles song off Abbey Road, which I feel like prevents Abbey Road from being a perfect album.
I love the Sun King, dude.
You love Sun King?
Yeah.
God damn it, dude.
I love the harmonies.
That's good, but there's too much. It's a little too long. Mm-hmm. It kind of meanders. I feel like maybe that's a me thing. I don't like songs that meander too much.
Maybe.
Feel like the song meanders a lot.
I mean, I will agree that that's probably the least favorite of the 12 songs in the album.
Yeah.
But even though there's technically 13, if you had bought the album early enough when it came out.
Oh, the Endless Nameless?
Yeah.
I feel like that song, I didn't put that on here because I feel like it sucks. It's just noise.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's probably just Kurt's way of saying like, oh, well, whatever. You know, like,
oh, well, whatever, fuck it. I can see that definitely.
I mean, they need to stick it to the man at some point, you know, like, you know, like on that album, you know?
Yeah, you're not wrong, dude. He's like, fuck you guys, you'll take this and you'll like it. Okay, so we got two songs here that were not on any album. They're on a compilation. The first one is called Verse Chorus Verse. Okay. Which was a song you wanted on here.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to explain this to me. We'll hear it first. Yeah, we'll hear it first.
Explain this. This is one of my favorite songs, and so this is why I kind of know a little bit of a backstory behind it. So, up to this point, you have some music critics who are still, like, I guess, hating on Nirvana. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're kind of old school. You know, they see Nirvana as, like, not being very good. All he does is scream into the mic. You know, and mm-hmm. blah 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 blah. He's not a good songwriter. So there was a criticism, and I don't remember the detail, like, where it came from. Some critic, whatever, said that he doesn't know how to write music.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you know, it goes back to the point where, like, he didn't really care about lyrics as much as melody, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what kept them from being a true, like, artist, right? You know, and so his response. So this song doesn't have any. The lyrics themselves don't have anything to do with, like, that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they named it verse, chorus, verse, specifically to, like, kind of, like, answer the critic or mock the critic.
Yeah,
because this song is a little bit different than most Nirvana songs in terms of how it's structured. Mm-hmm. So. It's kind of straightforward. It's literally verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in the history of, like, early music and so on, that's the way you wrote a song. Leading up to this point, especially with Nirvana, they didn't really do that. They tweaked it a little bit. They went chorus, chorus, verse, chorus, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know? And so that was just the snob being like, oh, well, you don't write the way everyone should be writing, you know what
yeah.
I mean? And so that was kind of like their way of saying, you know, like,
fuck you.
Yeah, you know. And so, like, the song doesn't have anything to do with that, but that's what the name is called, verse, chorus, verse. And I also like it, too, because it's just a good song. I love the hook and the chords.
Nice train. Okay, so yeah, no, it's all right. It's not really like a song I've ever heard before, so I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, it's fine. It was only ever just a demo, huh? They never did anything with released. It.
Yeah.
Because I got that from the Lights Are Out or what's mm-hmm. that? Yeah.
But there's another one called Sappy that kind of is connected to this, and we'll go about that later.
Yeah. Okay, so you also wanted another song. Called Marigold.
Yeah, but play it a little bit later.
Later?
Yeah, and there's a reason for that.
Okay. Okay. So we're gonna play Sappy now. This is by the way, I think were these both from the In Utero sessions? I know Sappy was.
Sappy was recorded four different times, right?
Yeah.
And so depending on which version you're hearing, yeah. You know what I mean? Sappy was originally called Sappy verse chorus verse, right? Yeah. This was a take on that same thing.
Yeah.
Then something happened. Again, I don't know the details. And then they wrote the other one. And then they're like, well, we'll call this verse chorus verse.
Yeah.
And then Sappy was just the original name that. Even though it was original,
yeah,
it was still called verse, chorus, yeah. verse. So it's a little confusing, and especially since that they recorded it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this is the original, technically, verse, chorus, verse, or Sappy, as some people will call it.
All right.
And if you save yourself, you will make him happy. Yeah.
And this is a song you never really heard before either, right?
No, I heard this before, yeah. Okay. Maybe like a year ago was the first time I heard this song.
And so this one, this is kind of like where I think if you paid attention at the time, but most people didn't really realize it. And it's all kind of like in hindsight now. But this is his first, like, this is like the version of Help.
Yeah.
So John wrote Help because he was feeling like really like consumed by it all, you know, and like he couldn't deal with it anymore. This is the first kind of like real instance where a song is like he's written a song, whether or not he meant to or not. But it's kind of like, because if you look at the lyrics, like and if you save yourself, you will make him happy. He's talking about like the system, the label, the music industry. He'll keep you in a jar, and you'll think you're happy because you're getting all this money, all this publicity, you're famous. You know what I mean? But really, you're in a laundry room. That clues that came to you, and then he'll give you breathing holes. Then you'll think you're happy. He'll cover you with grass or money.
Yeah.
And you'll think you're happy. Yada yada yada. But it's like there's a double meaning to the song. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it spoke to like what he was kind of feeling at the time.
I feel like this is such a great song. I cannot believe the song didn't make it to In Utero.
Mm-hmm.
It's like fucking Tourette's is on In Utero, but Safi didn't make the cut. Like, what the fuck? I don't know, but I feel like that's a great fucking song, dude. All right. So now on to In Utero, 1993, their last studio album. There's only a couple songs off of In Utero. Mm-hmm. For me, In Utero has a lot of not great songs. It has
So what they were doing here is they did get some criticism from fans, their hardcore fans,
the grunge fans, yeah,
saying that you kind of sold out because Nevermind was so produced
and really poppy.
Yeah, so they almost kind of do Weezer does this too in the beginning, where they went with very raw when they first started, and then they went to really heavily produced, and they were like, you know what, I think we need to go back to our roots and do something really raw, and this is extremely raw.
Yeah.
So,
and this is Serve the Servants. I feel like that song is very, it's like his sort of like Sappy. It's like he wasn't famous, or he wasn't that famous when Nevermind came out.
No, yeah.
And now he's a fucking international celebrity.
It was a tsunami.
Yeah. And this song, I think, is his like response to like being scrutinized constantly in the media, you know.
And he wasn't very his goal was never to be famous.
Yeah, he just wanted to make music, and he did not want any of all the other attention. Shit that came with it. Yeah,
and this is like a really bad time too, because now we're getting to the point where like the internet age is starting to happen, and it's people more paparazzi, you know, and they're like, oh, like people are all like, and we want more of this guy,
and he's with Courtney Love, which I think would drive any man insane.
The Yoko Ono.
The Yoko Ono.
So again, another parallel
of Nirvana.
But, connecting the dots.
John Lennon didn't end up killing himself, though. Spoiler. I love that last line. He's like, that legendary divorce was such a bore. I think he's like, people keep bringing up, oh, he's a child of divorce, and that really fucked him up and everything. And I think he's just like, nah, you guys are way overplaying that shit. But then he wrote in his journals that this song, like, he kind of wrote it a little bit, like, towards his father. Mm. It was, like, his way of saying, I love you, I don't hate you, and I don't want to talk to you. Because, like, there was a lot of, like, stuff in the media, like, oh, he, like, hates his dad and you know, all the angst and stuff. And he wanted to be like, I don't hate my dad, we just don't get along, and I love my dad. I think that was, like, what he was trying to get across. It's a good song. It's, like, the Smells Like Teen Spirit on this album. The anti Smells Like Teen Spirit. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Being stupid. All right. Next song. This is actually my first song that I consciously knew I was listening to Nirvana. Because long story short, my dad bought a new car, a Jetta, Volkswagen. This was like in 2003 or 4. And whenever that Black Nirvana album came out, the Greatest Hits.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, whoever my dad bought the car from, they left the CD in there.
Oh, really? Oh,
so sweet. When my dad picked me up, this CD had been on, and he didn't change it. And so, like, I'm in the car, I'm like, what is this? He's like, oh, it's this CD, and he hands it to me. And I see, like, the track number, and I look, and it's this song. And I'm like, I really like this song.
Then, and then you run into the house and go, Mom, Dad bought a Nirvana CD. It came with the car.
Stupid. But, yeah, and I fucking heard this album. I put this album on all the fucking time after that. And that was, like, my introduction to Nirvana, because, like I said, I was too young. By the time, you know, it was all over.
Yeah, you really did miss out, dude. It was a good time to be alive, dude.
By the time by the time Nirvana was over, which was like 94, right, when he killed himself, I was 3 years old, dude. I wasn't conscious of music.
What do you know about Nirvana, dude?
I didn't know shit.
You didn't live it.
I was alive, but I wasn't really conscious. All right, here's a Heart-Shaped Box, one of my favorite Nirvana songs.
Yeah, it's a great song.
What a song, dude. Mm-hmm. What a fucking song.
And Nirvana isn't known for having, like, great videos to their songs, but this is a really great music video if you ever had a chance to watch it on YouTube.
And I love the drop tune. I think it's, like, drop C or drop D.
It's a D,
Yeah, it's great. Just a great fucking song. All right, next song off the album, Rape Me, which I remember...
Which is another great song, and I know how to play this one on guitar. I'm like, I know where you're going.
It sounds very much like Smells Like Teen Spirit, the opening riff.
Yeah.
But I remember in like 7th or 8th grade, a kid gave a, you know, everyone got to do a research paper on whatever you wanted and present it to the class. And a kid did one on Nirvana, and he was talking about Rape Me, and the fucking teacher got really mad.
It's funny.
She's like, don't talk about rape. Like, blah, blah, blah.
It's funny. I used to go to school. I'm in elementary. And I would go in class going, rape me. Because I was singing a song and people were all like, I got in trouble. Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it.
Rape me. Rape me, my friend. Rape me. Rape me.
For as raw as this album is as a whole, they obviously knew which songs were going to be the singles because the last two songs were produced.
Yeah.
You can tell. But if, as you go through the album, the other ones are like all like, they're not that produced.
And Kurt Cobain wrote this from the perspective of a rape victim who's like taking back control through defiant submissions. Basically, mm-hmm. Yeah, fuck you, rape me, like more, you piece of shit, yeah. Fuck off. Like, kind of weird, but his heart was in the right place. but again, that exemplifies the quiet, and then just like, oh shit, it's so good. Can't say it enough.
It's hard to pull that off. Like most bands cannot pull that off. You know, but especially on a consistent scale like that.
Yeah. All right. Next song is Dumb. I'm not like them. Back in the town, the sun is gone. I had a light. This song, it's about how he met. He's always said that he always met like a lot of dumb people, and he thought like people that he thought were dumb were always seemed to be happy, and like easily amused. And, you know, it's almost like he wished he could be like that. It's kind of condescending, but
some might say that I am dumb.
But he's like almost saying like, "Oh, I wish I could be like that type of person," but instead of being fucking depressed all the time. And Frances Bean Cobain, his daughter, said that she doesn't like Nirvana really, but when she hears "Dumb," she says she starts crying every time, and it's her favorite Nirvana song.
It's one of my favorite too. I love "Dumb." Yeah. "Dumb."
It's kind of like the anti "Something in the Way" for me, or it's like a downer, but I like it. Mm-hmm. And "Something in the Way" is just a downer, and I don't really care for it. But whatever. Enough about that. Next song is Pennyroyal Tea. Pennyroyal Tea was an old timey method of aborting a baby. So that's kind of what the song's about. Yeah, I don't think it works, but it's just one of those like old wives' tales. Like, oh, I just drink a lot of Pennyroyal Tea, and you can like flush out a whatever. Let's hear that. I'm on my time with everyone. I have very bad posture. Such a good song.
Yeah, especially later on when they do it live.
Yeah. But So Kat always said that she like would her dream is to have an like to be in an all girl Nirvana cover band. And then like for some reason one day I was just like, you know what, you should call it Anemic Royalty from the from the lyric in that song. And like ever since then we always joke about it, like that she's gonna have one day an all girl Nirvana
all
cover
aboard,
band.
Kat, I could be your road manager. Let me know. I have some places that would love to hear you guys.
And I think that would be a great band name, Anemic Royalty for an all girl Nirvana cover band. I'm a marketing genius. I just want everyone to know that. The next song is actually the last song. So this is like the last, you know, song, sort of. It's not the last song they ever recorded, but it's the last song that's on one of the studio albums.
Yeah.
And it's called All Apologies. And this is the other... What? Yeah,
no, it's a great song, dude. Every time I hear a song, I shoot up heroin.
What the fuck?
Go on, dude. Go on.
You're like, it seems like a chill experience. But this is the other song that makes me think of Seattle, because I played this and Come As You Are constantly on the way up there and when we were there. And I hear that and I just like, I go back. This, I said Territorial Pissings is like my favorite song probably off Nevermind. This is probably my favorite song off In Utero. And it might be my favorite Nirvana song. It's either one of those two. Yeah. All right. See ya. The first time I heard that song was, you know, in the Jetta, and I was just like, oh my god, like holy shit. It was like one of the first times I was like, I felt something. I'm like 13 years old. I'm like, ooh, I felt that. The hell was that? Was such a good song.
No, yeah. I'll hold my comments for later till like towards the end for this song.
Why?
It's because just trust me, dude.
Okay.
But before you, I'm assuming you're going on to now, Unplugged, right?
See, okay, so I didn't shoot, and all of the songs I picked from Unplugged are the covers, not like their originals, because I feel like that would be too long.
Well, I was going to say, before you get to that, can you now play Marigold? Because this is where it kind of fits in.
Okay.
All right, so this is a little bit quick of a backstory and a parallel, again, if you're keeping score at home. So at this point in Nirvana, Kurt's really kind of, he's like hating life right now, you know, like he's just not for it right now, you know. And they kind of like are on a not it's not a real hiatus, but they're not really sure when they're gonna go back into studio again at this point, you know what I mean. And they've even had interviews, you know, where they're like, I mean, like, again, after everything had happened, this is like going again in hindsight, they're like, you know what I mean, we might not have gotten back together. We might not have gone into the studio again. Yeah. You know what I mean? We didn't know at that point, because Kurt was kind of gone a lot.
Yeah.
You know? He had already Francis at this point, you know? And he was getting really burnt out by everything. And at this point, Dave Grohl is starting to kind of come into his own. And he's starting to kind of, you know, like, write music himself, you know? Kurt was kind of an inspiration to that, and he kind of helped him out with that stuff. I mean, they didn't write together like John and Paul did, but he definitely valued Kurt's opinion on a lot of stuff, right? And there's an interview where they are talking to the three and or the four at this point, because now Pat Smear is a part of, officially a part of a band, part of the band, and
as the other guitarist.
Yeah. By the way, yeah. Well, anyway, so they ask him about things. It says and they ask him about Dave Grohl, and how he's writing, he's starting to write music too, and Kurt's like, yeah, like I'd love to have help, because I can't keep churning out the hits, you know what I mean? He would love to have Dave write music and do lead on certain things, and even on certain songs at this point too. They're even switching instruments. Kurt's on like on drums and whatever, you know, and Chris is on the guitar, and Dave's on bass or whatever, you know what I mean? Like they're kind of having fun now, or they're trying to have fun, you know? Yeah. But anyway, there's a couple of times though when Kurt doesn't come to the studio because he's just a no-show. He's like burnt out at this point, right?
Yeah.
And so they decide to, well, let's record one of the songs that Dave Grohl has written, and it's called Marigold. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of at the point now where Dave Grohl is starting to write. He's coming into his own. And if they would have continued, we could have seen Cobain and Grohl songs as part of Nirvana. But this is Dave Grohl in Nirvana as the lead singing.
I just let you know when to stop it.
Have you heard that one before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You brought it up like maybe a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, you should listen to that song. I was like, I've never heard of that. And then I heard it. I was like, oh, shit.
So what do you think of that? Because, I mean, like, there's definitely hints of what the Foo Fighters become, but yeah. I think it's still also Nirvana.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that would have been a good kernel to build, like, you know, because that's very much sounds like a rough, like, demo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which it was, because it was recorded during the inaugural sessions, you know. But yeah, so.
I feel like it could have become a great song.
Because I'm actually in that recording too, because it is more of a demo, but a produced demo.
Yeah.
Again, Kurt's not there. It's just Chris, Pat, and Grohl.
Yeah. Cool. So after In Utero, Nirvana records concert/album in New York. It's called Unplugged for MTV, and they do a lot of their originals and a lot of covers too. And there's three, I think, covers from this album that are like holy fuck, like just transcendent covers to me. First one is me being the David Bowie fan that I am, Man Who Sold the World, which is the first way I ever heard the song. But I had the on the Greatest Hits album, at the end you do hear him say this is a Bowie song.
So and this is just me, but I feel like this is one of those rare instances where the cover may be better than the original, dude.
You know, I used to get mad at that, but now I'm like okay with it. I'm at peace with the fact that the cover might be better. I still say Bowie, but I respect your opinion and I will not argue. All right, let's hear it.
I was a
can I add a couple of things? Sorry, that I feel might be important to this. Is that cool?
Sure.
Okay, so, Unplugged, right? Okay, so leading up to this, MTV was, of course, this is like their series Unplugged, where they bring people on and they're completely unplugged, right?
Yeah.
This is one of the first times where technically they're not really unplugged, but it's Nirvana, and so this is the most unplugged you're gonna get, you know what I mean? But when they invited them on, and when they gave the set list, all the network people already told them, you know, this is what we would like you to play. And then they're like, no, this is what we're going to play. And then they hand over the set list. And they were really worried because it was mostly covers, yeah. None of the big hits, you know what I mean? And most of these people have never even heard of some of these songs that are about to be covered. You know, some like Meat Puppet songs. Yeah. And they're like, who are these guys, you know what I mean? But earlier when I said how verse was kind of a response to the criticism that they couldn't write songs,
mm-hmm.
There's still haters out there at this point, and there's people saying that, yeah, but he still can't sing. He screams. So this was one way of showing, like, silencing everybody at this point now. Like he is a singer.
Yeah.
And he has a beautiful voice that it might not be the traditional, you know, like, perfect sounding voice, but you feel.
Yeah.
You know,
which is, I think, a most important attribute in a in a voice.
Yeah, so that's why a lot of these, like I know it's not a real album, like it's not a studio album, but I think this is their greatest album, again, because I like, personally me, I like raw and live sounding stuff, because again, it shows the pure in how they play and in his voice, yeah. And it's like you said, it's transcending, you know, yeah. Like, oh God, it's like an angel, dude. It's like an angel that is like, that has pain.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, oh.
The fallen angel? No, I'm kidding. So there's a great Bowie story that he, you know, he heard this and he loved it. He's like, oh, that's cool. You know, I appreciate it. I appreciate the love. And then, so, you know, he'd always played it, this song live because he loves this song. And so he plays it, you know, in somewhere in Europe. And a little kid comes up to him after the show and he's like, oh, man, I think it's really great that you're covering Nirvana. And then Dave Bowie, like, turns, looks at him and says, fuck you, you little tosser. Which is like... Bowie must have been like, fuck you guys, I wrote this song. This is my song. I've been performing this since 1970, dude. Fuck off. That's funny. But yeah, this song, that cover is amazing. All right, next cover, you said Meat Puppets, and this is Lake of Fire. Fucking love that cover. It's like a departure. It's what you're saying, they're showing their versatility.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely like a departure from their usual genre. It's almost kind of folky, country-ish, yeah. Kind of thing. It's so good. So yeah. Good. So the next song, the last song from this album, and the last song on the album, I think we talked about it before. Where Did You Sleep Last Night? A Lead Belly cover. To me, I might be exaggerating, and you can probably tell me I'm fucking crazy, but to me, this is like, because you said, you know, a singer, it's not always about how smooth you can hit the notes, like what notes you can hit. Sometimes it's just like the feeling, like, can you make someone feel, can you fucking feel the pain through the microphone? And to me, this is Kurt Cobain fucking, you know, stepping up to the plate. Fucking pointing to the outfield, mm-hmm. And fucking boom, just hitting that motherfucker,
yeah.
Flipping his bat, and just
and
this is like, to me, this is Kurt Cobain's greatest vocal performance.
And whenever I hear this song, like, it doesn't matter how many times I hear it, how often I hear it, whatever. Like you said, you feel it, I get chills. Like right now, I have chills. I haven't even heard it yet because I already know what's coming. You know, like I get chills. He makes you hurt.
Yeah.
And anyone who's not a Nirvana fan and hates on them and whatever, and like, if you can't feel it in this song, then you have no soul at all, man.
All right, so this is actually the last part of it, yeah, which is the best part.
That's the part. Yeah.
All right, so here it goes. This is "Where Did You Sleep Last Night," a cover of an old blues song by originally. He's doing a cover of Lead Belly's version.
My girl, where will you go? I'm going where the cold wind blows. In the pines, where the sun don't ever shine. I will shiver the whole night through. My God!
I'm reminded of Vin Scully when like this isn't like meant to be a joke or whatever, but it makes like perfect sense. Like he said that whenever there was a great moment that happened in baseball or sports or whatever, that he always felt like the crowd, like he should be silent, mm-hmm. and then the crowd should do it, you know, like should tell the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there was that moment right now after that ended where it was just quiet. Like that was the moment, you know what I mean? And like, I know we have one more song, right?
Yeah, one more.
Okay, I almost don't want you to play it because that's the way it should end. You know what I mean? Like, the next one, it's a cool song, whatever, you know what I mean? But it's produced. It's probably not the 100% the way it was supposed to be heard.
Okay, how about this? How about this? We'll play it in our next song, mm-hmm. but then we'll go back to "Where Did You Sleep Last Night."
Okay. All right.
So this is
wait, like an edit form or
no? We'll actually okay. just go back again.
All right.
All right. So this is "You Know You're Right." This is the last Nirvana song ever recorded, shortly before Kurt Cobain, as everybody knows, killed himself. No, allegedly, no conspiracy. Kurt Cobain killed himself. There's always like stupid shit around it.
Yeah,
but
I know.
And this song's really kind of creepy, not creepy, but almost like, oh, fuck, like, how did we not know? Cause he's like, the lyrics are fucking downer. Well, let's just hear it.
Bother you, never speak a word again, I will crawl away for good. I will
Again, another parallel. I mean, there's a lot of parallels, but so obviously at this point, Kurt Cobain is gone when they decide to go back to the studio and basically finish this song.
Yeah,
and it's a lot like the anthology for the Beatles, where "Free as a Bird" mm-hmm. and "Real Love,"
mm-hmm.
where they go back and finish a John Lennon song
years you know? Later.
Yeah. Yeah, years later. And again, so like what we hear from the song, it's a good song. I love the song. I play it when I'm on my guitar, and you know. But like it's always in the back of my head, like, this is the way we were meant to hear it,
yeah.
You know, obviously without Kurt's input, you know, it's probably a little bit different. It's a good song. Don't get me wrong. I love Nirvana. I love that song. But then going back to, Unplugged. So I mentioned how this was like their way of like showing the critics, you know?
Yeah.
Afterwards, when it's finished, this goes on to be like the greatest unplug in the series run of mm-hmm. unplugs. You know what I mean? It's the only one, I think, that's released into an actual album.
Mm-hmm.
And they sell DVDs too. You know what I mean? Even now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that was the peak of Unplugged, you know? And it's just a great album, you know what I mean? And it's probably a good way. Like we should just end the podcast that way. You know what I mean? Like when we're gonna end. But
yeah.
But before we go, wait. Do you have any more stuff?
No, I was just to say about, you know, you're right. The lyric, looking back, you're like, oh man, this verse. The "I'll move away from here. You won't be afraid of fear. No thought was put into this. I always knew it would come to this. Things have never been so swell. I have never failed to fail."
Mm-hmm.
You know, normally that you hear that song, you're like, oh man, that's fucked up. Like, you know, everyone's kind of felt that way, I guess, at some point. But looking back and knowing what happened, like, shortly after this,
yeah,
those lyrics are like, Jesus fucking, like, damn, dude, that's, oh mm-hmm. man, it hurts.
Before we end though, so again, like, you didn't really experience it as it's happening in life,
mm-hmm.
but like, so I mean, you're not like, Nirvana isn't your number one band.
Mm-mm.
Is it in top five for you at least, or no?
I would say it's probably five.
Okay, so like, why though? Like to you, why is Nirvana so important?
Excellent question, Albert. This totally isn't recorded later because I didn't totally blank out on the spot when you asked me this. But the reason I like Nirvana is, for me personally, I love music that has soul. There's a lot of music out there that, frankly, doesn't have soul. There's like dance music. Like, I don't really think that Taylor Swift believes anything she says. I don't think Katy Perry believes anything she says. There's a lot of music out there that I think is just bullshit that some fucking guys in a room fucking marketed into existence. Like, oh, this, we think this is going to be a good song. Like, we think if you use these keywords in the song, it's going to get, like, it's going to be a hit. So I like my artists that the things they write come from deep within. They can't help it. It's just something that just had to get out into the world. And I feel like Kurt Cobain was one of those guys that he couldn't not write the music that he wrote. He had to. It just poured out of him. And
I just love authenticity in music, and I feel like he was a really authentic person in his music. There's no fakeness, there's no artifice. It's all completely real, and I just, that's what I love in artists. Like, my favorite bands, the Beatles, they're like, you know, a lot of soul, and it was just stuff that came, you know, entirely from them. There's no outside influence, it's all them. Jack White, as you know, he gets a lot of hate, it's mostly from my wife Kat, but you know, he that music's, it's all him. There's no record labels not like telling him, well, you know, we tested within certain audiences, and we think we could really write a hit if you write about this. No, everything that he writes is from him. So with Nirvana, I feel like that's all them. He believes everything he's saying. That's not, you know, like the songs that he's being serious in. Because, you know, every band has like songs that they're just fucking around. Like, ah, fuck it. I just feel like there's no pretense with them. They were what they were. They never presented themselves as anything but what they really were. And I really appreciate that in music and in my artists. So that's why I love Nirvana.
I mean, because you're not one to follow, like, trends. I mean, yeah, a lot of times trends are good.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, you obviously always have had your opinion, yeah. You know. And
I feel like I just heard it at the right time. Mm-hmm. Like, I was 13. You know, you're 13. You're starting to think, like, you're better than other people.
Yeah.
You're starting, like, you get like that angst in it, and I heard this and I was like, this is fucking it. This guy tapped into this shit, and yeah. You know, it hit at the right time for me. And I just, you know, I just always liked the music aspect of Nirvana, especially their last two albums. All Apologies has always been in the rotation. You know, sometimes you'll listen to certain songs and then for a couple of years you won't hear it.
Yeah.
All Apologies, I don't think, has ever been out of my rotation. It's always been like a song I go back to all the time.
Yeah, it goes to show how important it is, because like it's 2018 and they can still play a Nirvana song.
Mm-hmm.
And it still means as much as it did then as it does now. It's still as powerful and it sounds as fresh.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they don't just play it like, oh, the 90s hour or whatever. Yeah. They play Nirvana all the time because it's Nirvana and it's perfect and it's great. You know what I mean? Like, it fits. Like, it's not them throwing in Nirvana song and along with contemporary music. It's people writing other music along with Nirvana songs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I feel like Nirvana is going to be one of those, you know, bands that it's just like, you know, even another 30 years from now, we're still going to be like, fuck, Nirvana was,
yeah,
it was one of those bands that just broke through and transcends generations.
And like, you can tell still to this day that it's hard for Dave Grohl to talk about it. For a long time, I was always kind of a little like butthurt about it. Kind of like, oh, like, why doesn't he care? But then I'm like, after I realized, like, no, it's not that he doesn't care. It's just that's too hard for him.
Yeah.
You know, and it happened, but in order for him to really like enjoy life now, he needs to kind of move away from it.
Yeah.
You know? A few things, like, I love the fact that Nirvana added someone to their band while Nirvana was a band, Pat Smear.
Yeah.
A lot of times bands hire people to like go on the road with them and put them on stage, and then they're like up there but the light's not on them.
Yeah.
Or they're not on any of the album covers or you know. But Nirvana was like, no, Pat Smear's a part of this band. We're not hiring this to go on the road with this. Like, he's a part of us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You never see bands anymore add people midway through a career.
Yeah.
And acknowledge the fact that they're a part of a band. You know?
Yeah, like Green Day has like a guitarist, but he's not in any of the promo pictures, nothing. Yeah, he's just like off to the side.
Sucks. Like, dude, like, but he's good enough to be there, but you're not really
part of it. Yeah, yeah, but Pat Smear was right there.
Yeah, he was there. And even Weezer does that, you know what I mean? A lot of bands do that. And Nirvana was always meant to be a 4-piece band. They did awesome as a 3-piece band, but Kurt knew that he wanted another guitar. You know, and brought Pat Smear in from what was he from?
The Germs.
The Germs, yeah. But really quick though, before you end it, or something you want to say, this is why it means a lot to me. So I'm a huge fan of music. Music is extremely important in my life and in my family, you know. And like you said, it was just the right time. Not just for me, but for the world. Like the Beatles were, like, you know, it was just the perfect time. It was the perfect time for Nirvana to come out, right?
Yeah.
Teenage angst and all that stuff. You know, like, if you think about it, the 90s were a good time. Like, we weren't going through recessions. There, you know, there wasn't, like, a lot of, I don't think, bad going on. And now that I think about it, you know, I mean, yeah, of course, there's like, always things like, oh, you know, like, this happened, you know, whatever. But, like, it was a pretty good time to be around, especially in the U.S., you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it goes to show that even for as well as things may have seemed to have been going, as happy as people may seem to be, he touched on something that was a little dark and a little negative that we all feel about ourselves, you know? And I know growing up, even though I seem to be a happy person all the time, you know what I mean? But I, like anybody, I mean, you know, you have those moments of like, why, you know?
Yeah.
And growing up, I was when I really noticed, especially in this time frame, my stutter and how important it was that I, because going into like junior high, you know, like I didn't want new people to know that I stuttered because they don't know me. Well, they're gonna make fun of me. I had friends, but they already knew. They were already used to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And junior high and high school, I was a little more kind of to myself. Yes, I made some good friends that I'm still friends with today, you know. But I remember, you know, like there's a line that he, that is in one of the songs that Kurt writes, you know, and he's like, it always meant something to me, like. I'm alone, but it's okay to be alone, you know, like it's okay, you know, and stuff like that. Like everybody will have something that that they take from all this, you know what I mean? But Nirvana was important to not just me, but the world. But when you listen to that last song, that's the last time anyone, that's the last time the world gets to hear him. And it's so perfect. You know,
where did you sleep last night? Time yeah, right? Yeah. Because you know, like you said, You Know You're Right came out like 10 years after Kurt Cobain had already died. So for a long time, the last thing anyone ever had of him was Where Did You Sleep Last Night? And you almost kind of wish they didn't come out with You Know You're Right, just because it like Where Did You Sleep Last Night is just such an amazing performance. But so yeah, we're going to end on that again. We're going to play that last part again.
All right. And then before we do, send my goodbyes. Also, one more thing. Big shout out to Eugene Shin. You are listening to us on some pretty cool high tech equipment that he's letting us use.
And we're still trying to work the kinks
out. So if there's a hum throughout this, that's why. But we're gonna get it down, and this is it's gonna be really good. But anyway,
stick it up your ass, Lito.
Yes. Bye, everybody.
My girl, where will you go? I'm going. The cold wind blows in the pines where the sun don't ever shine. I will shiver the whole night through.